All right, well, welcome to our 14th episode of Up on Foil, the podcast where we talk all about foiling. I first want to thank Pavel Ravitz to support us. He's our first Patreon. We put up a little Patreon site, so if you want to help us out, go on our Patreon site. It's linked in the description. But let's start with our guest, Lucas, or you might know him as Foil Only on Instagram. And I found on his Insta bio, it says digital creator, dude from Germany. He loves foiling way too much. He has thousands of followers. And the first time I saw you actually was when you downwinded in Lake Garda, which was super impressive for me. Thank you for coming on the show, Lucas. Did I forget anything? Do you want to add something to your introduction?
First, I want to say thank you for having me. I'm super excited about this podcast. I'm a big fan of podcasts. And when it's about foiling, it's even better. So thanks for having me. And yeah, I think you did a nice introduction. I think that's it. Yeah, let's dive into it.
Cool. All right. Awesome. And we wanted to record yesterday, and that didn't happen because you had a little downwind, I don't know, mayhem. Maybe you can just start the episode by telling what happened yesterday.
Yeah. Sorry again missed the opportunity to jump on the show. I don't know if you saw my latest reel on Instagram. I'm actually telling the story, but I will tell it again here in the podcast now. So yeah, we went for a downwinder, and it's actually a downwinder that I've done many times. But this time I switched to a very small new foil. And yeah, the conditions out there were so big and so wild. So we went that fast that it just felt so quick. And I was like, looking at my watch, and we were out for half an hour. And normally this run I take like, I don't know, 2 hours. So I was thinking, okay, we are still not in the near the exit point. But then I was thinking, okay, this is a new coastline. I don't know, maybe they changed something because I've done this like a year ago for the last time. And I'm like, I've never seen that building. And then I was like, okay, I need to sit down and watch my phone. And suddenly I realized I went too far. I just missed the exit point. Yeah, my buddies, I always share a link, you know, for a beacon, like to track them or to let them track me. And they were already like sending text message and like, dude, you go too far, we are here. And yeah, I was like trying to find a spot to go out, but it was like almost the end of the island. So it would have been a long, hard paddle. But then suddenly I saw a sailing boat on the horizon, and I knew that this was my chance to get a shortcut back, you know? So I went for that sailing boat and, called them and were screaming like, because I know I had to stop them, like not let them go past me. So luckily they stopped, they took me on board, and I went upwind with them, and they gave me a beer, a few very nice guys from Austria. So we all had a great story to tell now. So that was cool. A lucky one.
That is amazing, man. But let's just stay with that, because downwinding, it looks incredible. It looks nice, but usually you're far out. It's not like winging or pump falling where you're close to the coast. You're far out. What about safety? You said that you share your position, but still, aren't you scared sometimes?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not an easy environment. We have definitely, we have to take care of some stuff and do our homework to keep it as safe as possible. But yeah, still the head is always like, going with you, and I try to focus on my lines and on the run, to not spend, too much time on like drifting away with my thoughts. So that helps. But yeah, I do care a lot about safety. So for example, what I do is, and what I recommend is like always take a rescue vest or inflatable or static vest with you. So is the worst case is if your leash break and you lose your board, you have to be able to float for quite a while to swim to the land or wait for a rescue. So that's the first thing. I'm always thinking about if something goes wrong, you need to stay like a few hours in the water and be comfortable without getting too cold. This is also something like taking a big wetsuit, like even if it's a little too warm, better put it down or jump in the water to cool down instead of being too cold. So that's the second thing. And then for sure, communication, it's the most important thing. I always share my location on multiple devices, on the watch and the phone. And then I also have a personal beacon, like a proper one, which has a GPS signal and sends
like
also the message.
What is it called?
I think it's called Rescue Me, PLB1. They're quite expensive. They're about €300. But they're super small, and what they do, they don't use the mobile network. Yes. So you don't have to have internet connection or mobile connection. So they go on the radio signals, and also like when you, it's just one button press and you pull out an antenna, one button press, and you're sending a rescue signal to all the boats around and all the coast guards on the coast. So that's a pretty good feeling to have this with you. And yeah, I think that's basically it. And then for sure, check your forecast, check the conditions, you know, and always, don't do stupid things and go step by step. Go with short runs, extend them, not go full in, all in. So for me, that's my plan. But still, it's like we go far out, like you say, and we are out there and shit can happen always. You can fall, you can, I don't know. And then for sure, it's also nice if you go together in a group. But sometimes it's just, even especially when it's big out there, it's so hard to stay together. When on the smaller runs, when we have like 20 knots or 25 knots, it's super easy to go together. Even on long runs, like 35 kilometers, we stay more or less in a group with five people. And that's the safest thing you can do. But you will lose yourself pretty quick when you go in big conditions. And then you have to be on your own and you have to be comfortable out there.
If you lose your board, if the leash, I don't know, breaks, you lose it. The board is so much faster than you, I imagine.
Yeah, especially the downwind boards. When they catch a bump, they can get pretty fast. I never tried that, how fast it goes. But I'm replacing my leash every year just to have a good leash in a good in a good healthy condition, you know. And trying to make it really safe that you don't lose the board.
Actually, I had a question, which was, what gear are you bringing on board when you go for these long runs? But you pretty much addressed it. Is there something else that you're bringing with you? Like, I guess if you have like a backpack with some water and stuff like that, do you take like even gels and these kind of things to stay fueled and hydrated? Or you just go with the flow and hope for some boat to throw you a beer?
It depends always on the run. I mean, I have my everyday belt. I'm using a vest on the belt, you know, an inflatable. And I have this bacon there. So even if I go out winging, I always take this like basic safety stuff with me, even if I'm just in the bay, because I try to get used to it and see it as a standard, you know, because then if it's something special, maybe you just don't take it on that specific day and then shit happens even in the bay.
Have you ever had to use it? Sorry.
No, not really. Not really. I tried to, no, it's, I never inflated the vest. So, I was fine, but this is my standard stuff that I always take with me. It's like taking a leash, you know, so, or like taking your shoes when you go out of when you leave home. So I try to make it really as a standard. And then when we go on longer runs, let's say, I don't know, 35 kilometers plus, I take water with me. I take food with me, like maybe just a little bar. So then the run is more comfortable. And you don't dehydrate.
Is it like a dry bag or?
It's a backpack. It's a backpack where I put in a camel pack, you know, and then I put water inside and some bars, stuff like that.
I guess that for longer runs, planning is a huge part. Do you have like some tips that you can give to plan these long downwind runs? Do you go like only when you know that there are other downwinders, or you like to explore? And in those cases, how you go through it?
So it's always just more fun to go in a group, and logistics and shuttle are way easier if you are in a group. So I always prefer going in together with friends, because this is for me also a big part of downwinding, like have that crew game, sitting together in a car, organizing stuff. And it's really a sport that you do together. And but in some places I've been, let's say, for example, I just recently have been in Sicily, and there's not a big scene and not a big crew. So maybe there's one guy, but he's exactly living on the other part where you are in the island. And so it's hard to group together. And then I have to go by my own. So, but then I wouldn't never do like crazy runs, you know, go far out or I don't know, or do long lines. So I always try to keep it then short. Or maybe, for example, I use the wing to go out and go upwind, because then you see already how the bumps looks like, if there's a current, if there's shit floating around, like fish and nets or whatever, you know? So you go with the wing, and if it's, or the bumps are too offshore or whatever, I just turn around with the wing and go downwind with the wing and had a blast on a wing session. But I don't fully send it sub downwind when I don't know how it's going to be down there, you know?
That's super cool. Maybe we can you talked about winging. Go through your steps on foil. First of all, how do you get into water sports? And then what were your progressions, your step onto downwind foil, which is the thing you do mostly, as I think?
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting one, because I actually had no background in water sports at all. So I was like just a landlocked guy. You know, as you know, I'm from Germany, so we are far from any ocean. I'm in next to Munich, so in the south, so really far from any ocean. And then I moved into a house which is pretty close to a river. And I was thinking, man, I want to do something in the water, in this river. It looks so exciting. It looks so cool, because it has quite a decent water flow. It's not like a standing river. It's more like a pretty good water flow. And I saw on Instagram the Swiss guys, they use surfboards on bungee to surf in the river, you know. So they extend the bungee and then they getting pulled into the current and into the water flow, and then they redo this again. And I was trying that, but it was pretty stressful for your back. It's a lot of power on the cable and a lot of tension, and it also just worked a few days a year because you really need a lot of water flow. And then one of my friends, he had this kite foil, you know, like he just started kite foiling. And I saw this also on Instagram. I was like, man, this is so efficient. It must be way better for this. Like, you can go so fast and maybe you don't need that hard water flow. So we gave it a try and it actually didn't work at all. But this idea was born, you know. The foil was way too small. We tried small boards. We had no idea how to foil. I mean, we all know the steps when you see it, like dog starting on Instagram back then. We were like, okay, this is easy. Let's buy a foil and go dog starting. And then suddenly we realized it's not that easy, you know. And it was more or less the same process, but we had the idea was born. And so we played around. We took bigger foils and tried to find a big wing board, which was back then not so easy to get. But in the end, we made it work. And that for me was the point where I could say, okay, I can go in the river every single day, because it was every single day there's water in the river flowing. So I could spend a lot of time on foil, and this is how it began. So then I noticed I can turn around and I can stay on foil forever. You know, it's just like putting pressure on the bungee, releasing pressure, but you can stay on foil forever. And this is how I learned foiling. And then I moved into pump foiling, just by letting go the rope and trying to make that thing fly. I started pump foiling, and then the rest is more or less like, it all started from there. I went into winging. I learned on Cap Verde, and then the addiction was real. So I had this foil brained head already, and I was trying to keep going it. Yeah.
How long ago was that, the bungee story?
Oh, it must have been now, I don't know, maybe 4 years or 3 years, 3-4 years, something like that.
I want to know more about this bungee foiling, because like there's not much stuff about that. I guess you were using foot strap, right?
In the very beginning, not. So if we try on the in the very beginning, we use just big boards, and this is also when people want to get into bungee foiling, I just tell them like the same what you would do if you want to go winging. Start with big boards. They are stable. You can step on it. Start with big foils that are not super high aspect. And then you can control the board and the foil. And basically you can stand on it, like really on the water, like on a stand up paddle. And you just carve left and right, and you create drag. So the bungee will extend by this drag. And once you point your board into the flow, the drag is reduced, because, you know, the board is streamlined, and the bungee is pulling you up on foil. And then you just glide like you would do with a winch. And the next step then is trying to not release this tension fully. Like then you hold the tension and you just carve left and right and do turns.
You did pretty much freestyle tricks on that bungee, as I saw on your channel.
Yeah, and then for sure, if you can fly and if you can like stay on foil and fly, it's the same process of what you do in winging or in any other discipline. You're trying to scale down your boards and your gear. So in the end, we went with little dock start boards like Axis Tray or whatever. And then we put foot straps on to make us jump and not lose the boards. And I was trying to make ollies or I don't know, I even tried to make backflips, but I was a little scared of that. So I stopped with that. But and I was always inviting people like really freestyle wingers because I'm not a freestyle guy. You know, I'm not flexible. My head is not crazy enough to do like the crazy stuff that the wing guys are doing. So I was like reaching out to Balz Müller, Radiculo, and to Nicolas, like the crazy guys who can do like all the backflip shit and front flip stuff. I was reaching out to invite them to the river because I'm 100% sure it's possible there.
Did they come?
No, never, never. It's still like, this is an official reminder. So.
All right.
By the way, are you still training in the river or now you're fooling to downwinding and wing foiling?
I still enjoy the river, actually. So it's still a very fun way to foil because it's not like you cannot compare it like foiling, for example, foiling behind the boat on a rope. This is super boring. You're just getting towed and it's like, you know, it's more or less like e-foiling. Once you are like on an advanced level, you're not enjoying anymore.
You're but not active, river, right?
Bitte? Sorry?
You're not active when...
Exactly, exactly. Load. And it's pretty constant, you know? It's not changing. Like, it's just if you do nothing, nothing will happen. But in the river, you have to be way more active and react to what's going on there, you know? And it also requires more skills. It looks super easy, but it really takes time to get it. And then that's the fun, you know? That's the learning process which brings the fun. So I still enjoy, but yeah, I mean, recently I really did some nice adventures in the ocean, and it's a different playground. So, yeah.
I saw that you started. I just went through your Insta videos, and suddenly the downwinding started to appear a lot more. And my question is, you did some races, is that correct? Do you still do them?
Oh yeah, I just skipped two now because I was so busy with my work, but I do them, and I did the first one in Crozon, the Open de France, and it was the first big downwind event in Europe after COVID, and this one was on my list because I wanted to meet the community, you know, all the legends from Hawaii, from Australia, they've been there, so. Basically, I went there not for competing, just to meet them and to see the pros like competing, you know. I remember that on I think it was three runs on different days, and I was on the starting line. I was just sitting there, and because I wanted to watch them how they take off, you know, I was just because I knew that I had no chance to compete, so I chilled myself down and just watching the race from the best perspective, you know. See how they take off and how they compete in the very first beginning. And then I took off and I did my run and was happy to do the run. You know, it was a nice run. And also for the races, for me, it's cool. You go to a spot where you've never been and the logistics are done. You don't have to care about anything. It's like an all-inclusive downwind week, you know. So, that was my first event in Crozon. And it was really, really good, some good conditions. And also, I went there 1 week before, so you have like 2 weeks of downwinding fun with some really, really good downwinders.
I imagine you improve as well if you see them.
A lot, a lot. And also riding different conditions helps a lot of improving.
If we can get like a bit more specific, because I'm getting into it. Finally, we have some decent conditions now in winter time here in Cyprus. I found difficult to say, like to scan the water and find like the right bump and the right position on the bump once you find it. So do you have some tips? Because you're pretty efficient since you're doing these runs in Lake Garda where the conditions are, I think, not that big. So what's your suggestion?
Yeah, so let's break it down. So I would say downwind foiling, in the learning part, you can break it down in two pieces. The first piece is getting up on foil, which requires the right pedal technique and the right thing to get you up on foil. Like when we talk about stand-up pedal foiling, sure, we use a pedal, but nowadays there are also other options to get up on foil. Like you can use a foil drive to get up on foil. You can use a wing to get up on foil. You can use a para wing to get up on foil. Or you can, like you do, you can dog star to get up on foil, you know? So this is just the first part. How can I get up on foil? And then the second part is like, how can I stay on foil and reading and riding the bumps? And when someone is asking me, okay, I want to start downwinding, I always look, what is the background? Like, for example, when you're always able to wing and you can go like pretty comfortable with the wing and you can jibe or tack in both directions, I say, just go downwind with the wing, you know, just take your car, drive up, go out, do downwinders with the wing, because then you just hold the wing down and you can ride and read the bumps and you don't have to care about the takeoff, because it's super easy for you to take off. So you can really focus on the second step. And then once you can go like for, let's say 500 meter or 1 kilometer, and I'm talking about this first because I think most of the people are already able to wing. So a lot of downwinders can come from the wing pretty easily. So I say, go together with your friends, share downwinders, don't go out in the bay, go the downwind and see if you can do like 500 meters or 1K without touching the wing, just free winging, hold the wing down. Then you are able and ready for the next step. And the next step then is you go with two guys together and you share a wing. So you attach an anchor to the wing and the first guy starts and go take off, drop the wing down, and the second guy behind him can take the wing for the takeoff. And once you're able to go 500 meters or 1 kilometer and then you fall, you just wait for your buddy and he will carry the wing behind you and drop the wing to you so you can take off again. And then you can do like, you go on a run, which is, I don't know, 6 to 10K, and you just do this wing sharing stuff until your body is just carrying the wing and you don't need it anymore once you're up on foil, you know, that can happen.
That is so cool.
And then you are ready to go on a big board. But then first, again, take your big board and go winging with it, you know, just don't take a big stand up paddle board and try to go with the paddle right away, because it feels different. It's just a different feeling of pumping, of turning. Do some runs with the wing, and then in the last step, go for the paddle up. So you size up the foil a bit to make it easier to paddle up, and then then you work on the hard part. But once you're up on foil, you will enjoy, because you already know how to downwind, and you just need to focus on the paddle up. And now, I mean, now you have, I don't know if it's, I still prefer the paddle, but I think it's really, really an advance, and it's not for everyone. I mean, imagine if you are, I don't know, 65 plus and you don't have the physical power anymore, maybe. So there are other options now available, like maybe a para wing can help, or I don't know, a wing or, but this would be the journey when you want to really go into the stand-up paddling. I think going with the wing first is a good option if you have that wing background.
That is really cool. When you say a big paddleboard, how big are you talking?
For the beginning, go long and skinny, like 8.0 or longer, like 8.0 by, I don't know, by 18, 19, something like this. This was also my first breakthrough when I got this Kalama board. I ordered it in Hawaii because there was like almost no downwind boards available in Europe. Yeah, just ordered the custom board from the Barracuda, the very first one, which was not even the factory board available. So I ordered in Hawaii and then he sent it to me, and it took me like 3 sessions to get up on foil with it paddling. And I had no paddle background. And if I look at my paddle technique now, I'm like, what the fuck? How could I get up with this paddle technique? It's just, it was almost pure pumping, you know, but you can, when you put a big foil on it, you can just bring it up on foil by pumping. And this is also like super helpful. I had a huge, I didn't have a huge wing background, but I had a huge pumping background. And with the pumping, it helps a lot to get up on foil. And also it helps to just recover from mistake, or if you don't see the right line, you can pump through it. So this is like a little joker you have if you are able to pump.
So you don't necessarily have to learn the flat water paddle up to be able to downwind, right?
Yeah, that's true. You don't really need it, but it's a nice way to work on your paddle technique.
Yeah.
So in the end, you will see there is no good sub downwind foiler who is not able to take off a foil in the flat water. So it just fits good together. It's a good training, but it's not 100% necessary to go downwind foiling.
Have you done downwinders on Bodensee?
No, never, because I was always like thinking about that, but I was not seeing the right conditions coming, and then... No, I never done it, but I think it's possible for sure.
There's a pretty big scene in on Lake Neuchâtel. I don't know if you've heard of Jonas Hiller and the other guys. They go up by train and go down. Have you ever done that?
Niels Mango, all these crazy guys. Yeah, no, I never done this, but it's on my list for sure. This lake, I want to cross it. Yeah,
nice. If you ever, I live just close to that, so if you're around, you can. Stay here if you want, open invitation. But then you went down Lake Garda. And for me, that's pretty interesting because I've been there many times and I know how long it is. I imagine it feeling a little safer because you're close to shore all the time compared to the ocean. But still, it's a long way to go. It's far away from everything. How was that for you? Did you do many attempts or was it just one go and it was good?
It was not planned. It was not planned. It was just, I mean, the cool thing about Lake Garda, as you mentioned, like it's a super safe way to learn downwind foiling because it will never get scary big. It's not like you're getting into open ocean swell or whatever. You don't have like cross swell. It's just pure wind swell. So very aligned. There's not a lot of backwash disturbing you. And then, I mean, if you are in the middle of the lake, especially up there in the north, it's not far to the land, so you feel very comfortable. The water in the summer is warm, so it's one of the best places to learn downwind foiling. And also, you can ride big foils, and that means when you ride big foils, you always have some good pumpability. So even if the wind drops, you can still go, you know. And if you are with small foils on the ocean and the wind disappears and the bumps disappears, you are like not foiling anymore. And this is also like super helpful to ride big foils because you always have that little headspace to move still if the bumps are getting smaller and smaller. So that makes it for a good place to learn. And also you have shuttles like almost everywhere because there's just a bus going up. So what you can do and what I do is I just start up there in the north and I see how long the wind is carrying me. And on this morning, I knew the forecast was not too bad, but it was not very promising. And I was expecting maybe to go 15 kilometers to my Chisinau or wherever. So I gave it a go. I started in the very morning because the wind starts pretty early and then stops like midday. And yeah, and it I was foiling and it went better and better and better. And I was just could not stop because it was so good. And also it's not very tiring because you go slow, but it's more chill, you know, it's more chill than being in the ocean where it's like always like super windy and big. So yeah, I felt very comfortable and I didn't stop until I finished the lake.
That is so cool. Could you do, cause there's the vento in the morning and the ora in the afternoon, right?
Yes.
Could you start like not super early in the morning and then have some lunch when there's no wind and then go back with the ora?
That's what I did. Yeah, I did it.
Oh, you went back. Oh, I didn't see the way back.
No, not on this one. On this one, it was not possible because on this one, if the wind is so strong in the morning and you go the wind doesn't start for the evening. It doesn't start down there. So it's just up there in the north, the wind in the evening, how do you call it again? Ora and...
Ora, vento is the morning wind and ora is vento the afternoon is the morning wind.
Yeah, yeah. So the ora is just in the north part. So it's not possible to go from down there 55 kilometer up again. That would be epic. But what I did on another day is I went from, in the morning, I went from Torbole, down to my Chisinau, then had a lunch, like a nice pasta and waiting for the wind to turn around. And then I went the other way back. But it's just the wind is good for 10 kilometers, not more, because it's just up there in the very north.
I guess you foiled pretty much everywhere. And I don't know. So I guess that, as I understood, Lake Garda is probably the best location to start to learn. But now, at the moment, what's your favorite place you've been to?
That's a good question, because I'm actually working on a top ranking for the best downwind locations in Europe. So I can release it here. That's pretty cool. Okay, let's bring it down where I have been. I've been in the north part of Germany, like up there on Fehmarn and around this. I've been downwinding there. I've been downwinding on lakes, like on our local lake, on Lake Ammersee in Germany. Like, this is really next to my house. I've been downwinding on Lake Garda. Then we went in Crozon, which is in France, in Brittany. I have been in France also, like down there in Almanar, where the you know, the Mad Glider crew, awesome downwind crew there, big scene. I have been in Sicily recently, and then even on Malta, on this island, I've been downwinding. Finally Barcelona, for sure. Barcelona is also like a super nice spot and a good crew with Xavi, and there are like a few stores and a few cool downwind crew guys. And then I went to Tarifa just now, because it was on my list for a long time, but I've never been there. It's so far. So I discovered Tarifa, and now I'm on the Canaries, on Tenerife. So these should be like in the ranking, these spots. So, and to make it sure to not talk, I mean, each spot has their own like spicy, nice stuff that you can discover. So it's worth to go everywhere for downwinding. And it's basically, if it's water and if there's wind and if there's a fetch of, I don't know, 5 kilometers, you will have good condition. Fetch is the part where the wind can, for those guys, they don't know, it's the where the wind can catch the water and push it, you know? So if you have a good piece of fetch and some wind, you can go downwinding for sure.
Sorry, how big the fetch needs to be?
I don't know, maybe 2 to 5 kilometers, something like this. It can already work. I mean, on Lake Garda, I start with 0 fetch in the very north, and you can ride the bumps after 5 kilometers pretty good. It always depends then how strong the wind
you
is.
You can.
For sure. No, I think everyone can, because it's very easy to ride these small, slow bumps. You just need a big foil, and that's also what most like people coming from the wing, and they are used to use small foils. But it's hard to tap into the energy with very small foils. So you just need big foils and go back to the beginning and start right from the beginning, like with big foils and maybe a smaller mast even. So it's but you can even on Lake Garda. Okay, so you were asking about the top spots. So I would say Lake Garda is for sure one of my top spots for the summer, because of the because it's I always rank in how much fun it is to ride, so how good is the quality of the bumps, and it's a different spot on Lake Garda, but it can get pretty big. So when you have this wind in the morning and you go down from a chase in it, it can get really like proper waves and proper swell. So it's fun. Sure, not like in the ocean. You don't want to ride a 700 square centimeter foil, but you can go under 1,000 square centimeters and you will have fun. And then a good part there is the logistics. You can go by your own and you can shuttle pretty easy because of the bus services.
Is that no problem getting back in the bus?
No, it's actually like the big buses which have the big storage under the seat, so that you can just put your gear in there. And for now, it's not a problem. They take bikes, they take surfboards, and I see some kiters doing this, and so I see some wingers doing this, so they are pretty much used to it.
Nice.
And yeah, so that's a good spot for the summer and for the spring maybe. But in the winter it's just not a good way to go. So my favorite is still Tenerife. That's why I'm here right now. It has a pretty long good coastline. It's pretty aligned and it's super constant, the wind. You have the trade wind, which when it comes it just blow for weeks, and very very strong and like good wind even in the winter. In summer it's even better. It's very constant in the summer, but in winter it's also nice that sometimes for the downwind, if the wind changed the direction, you can enjoy a new run. You see a different perspective from the coastline. So that's pretty cool that it's not super, super constant. And then you have this highway going really up the shore. So this is also like a very important thing. If you want to do a 10-kilometer run, for example, here, you just go on the highway for 10 minutes car driving, and that's pretty efficient. So you can do multiple runs a day. For example, when I've been downwinding on Sardinia, I don't know if I mentioned it, that I was on Sardinia. Awesome conditions. The conditions were like so super nice, and what a fun. So it was so big. I was not expecting this. But then going up with the car on this coastline is a nightmare. It just takes ages. So it was nice to do it one time for discovering, but then, yeah, it's maybe even faster to wing it, you know, wing upwind. And that's a big plus point here in Tenerife. And then you have an awesome crew. You have good schools, good gear. This is a big, and yeah, the community is growing. So it's now we have a group here on WhatsApp, and you see like, oh, I'm going up. Is someone willing to join? Or so you have a lot of shuttle cars going all the day up and down and trying to group together and make some good downwinders. But also like Tarifa is maybe the second place, for winter, because it's warm there. And then you have like awesome conditions. And what's really unique about Tarifa is you have the Atlantic part and you have the Mediterranean. So you can choose, and it's different. It's different riding. It's different bumps. It's a different style. And you can do many options, but it's way harder to read the forecast because you have to look on the tides. You have to look on the wind, currents, coefficient. There's a lot of more to read. And if you're not a local, or if you don't know a local, it's not the easiest place to go, because if you go out on the wrong spot, or there's too much shore break, it can be like not so easy and enjoyable. And here on Tenerife, it's much more simple to go downwinding.
Would you say that I see like downwinding is opening up so many possibilities, because there are not too many surf spots in the Mediterranean, right? But as you demonstrated, there are lots and lots of spots for downwinding, right? Like pretty much, as you said, everywhere where there is some wind. Like how much wind do you need, in your opinion? 20 knots?
We go out here when it's 50 knots, we have a lot of fun. So basically we go out when it's too light to go winging, we still go downwinding. And if you go out far in the ocean, there's always some energy, like not crazy far, but if you go out 2 kilometers, there's always moving water. And even if it's not really windy and you could not go winging, you can go downwinding. So this opens up a lot. And also, like, I use my full downwind rig, like the long skinny boards and the foils and the paddle, to just have fun in on the shore. Like when it's no wind and you have a little swell or just a tiny little wave, I put a big foil on it, I flat water start, you pump into that wave, and you're gonna have fun. And the coolest thing about that, and I have a pretty small, this is I basically have two boards. Like one is a big long board for heavy ocean to be able to ride small foils and get it up on foil and still be pretty stable to take off in difficult areas. And then I have a really tiny 80-liter starboard, 15 inches wide. And this one is like, I don't know, 5 kilos. So it pumps hell. It's so good. That's the one that I crossed Lake Garda with. So it's not made for putting me out in difficult situations, but I prefer it on the lake or even on the shore, like I mentioned. So you can just start on the flat water and you pump until you find some energy. And it's more or less flat water pump foiling, but you can catch some little waves and play around. And this is also what I really, really enjoy.
That is really cool. I saw some videos of you that you built your dock on the beach, right where you are at the moment. Looks super cool. But I have a question about you as a digital creator, and maybe also the personal life. Like, when did you start creating videos, making videos? Why did you start making videos? And is that your full-time job at the moment, foiling? How does that work?
No, it's not my full-time job. And actually, I'm trying to really keep it separate and keep it as a hobby. Because I think for me personally, if I keep that as a hobby, I still maintain that freedom, you know, that moment where I say, no, I don't want to go foiling today. I want to spend time with my family, or I want to build a shitty dog and not use my foil drive, you know, or not use my sponsored gear because I have to create content for them. So even with my partners, they are all super cool and they support my mindset and my type of, that I just telling them I'm not a professional athlete. And that's also why I'm calling me maybe a digital creator, whatever, to not be in this cage of like, this is my life, this is my work. So I prefer to keep that separate and to keep that mindset of being, I can do what I want, you know, and enjoy foiling as much as I can as a hobby because time is limited. And, I try to keep it like that. So, but yeah, I have to make my money. And if I don't do it with foiling, I have to do it in another way. And I'm running a media agency, called Abgedreht. It's a German word. Sounds a bit weird in English. And that's what I do for a living. So basically we are creating content for big companies and running their YouTube channels or Insta channels.
You can drop your website.
Oh yeah, it's we put it in the show notes because it's hard to pronounce, but it's for all the German guys, it's called Abgedreht, and they know ab-gedreht.de.
All right, nice.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm not sure you've heard the last podcast, which is what I do as well. I also run a marketing agency.
Yeah. And some kind, I mean, actually, I've met a lot of guys. I just recently here on Tenerife met Julia from Fuerteventura. Her Instagram is Fuerte Julia, and she's an awesome person. Very, very cool. Very, very nice mindset. Just incredible person. And we met here for a foil drive shooting, which is, I think, yeah, stopped today. We did a week of content for foil drive. So why I mention this because she's also in the media world. So I think there are a lot of people like, because we are now, it's actually, you see the foiling world, like we are making a podcast right now. So it's nothing that just happens offline, you know, it's like podcasts, it's Instagram, it's YouTube. And I really, really like that community vibe and that they share all the knowledge, you know. James Casey was very early in setting up a very nice digital school kind of training, coaching stuff. And you find so many tutorials on how to dog start or how to beat start and whatnot. So I don't know where it's coming from, but I think it's somehow connected that foiling also is part of a social media community thing and not just offline happening in the water.
So Fuerte Julia, should she be on the podcast as well, you think?
Oh, yeah, for sure. We need more girls on podcasts and more girls in the foiling world. So, and she's amazing, I'm sure. I already heard a lot of stories and she's like a water woman for her whole life and coming from Fuerteventura, grown up there. So she's, I think you should send her a message.
All right, we'll do that just after podcast. I have another question about your private life, maybe if you want to share. You said you have a kid, you have a family, but foiling takes a lot of time. How do you manage? Does your partner also foil? I don't know how old your kids is. I think I saw a picture, still pretty small. They probably will eventually get up on foil as well. How does that work?
Yeah, so it's always like first, I have, and maybe at this stage, I have to thank my wife, Tini, because she's like super supportive and she knows that foiling is giving me so much, you know. She sees when I'm coming out of the water with a big smile in my face and had the best time of my life. And she sees that and she knows that this is super cool for me. So she's super supportive and she's allowing me to have these moments, you know. And then, I have two kids. So the oldest one, my two boys, Carl is 4 years old and Finn, the small guy, is 1.5. And it's not easy to be with them, like when I'm downwinding. And sometimes we leave early in the morning when the sun is coming out and we come back when it's dark. And yeah, for sure, here on Tenerife, we don't have a kindergarten or something, so she takes care of the kids, and it's huge. I know it's a lot of effort, and yeah, but that's I mean, it all comes with it's not easy, you know. To also with the business, I'm working remotely from here with my employees back home. In I have 15. We are a group of in the end 14 people. And we work on teams, and I do remote working, and it's always like, yeah, try to find a balance between all this. But I think in the end it's worth it, because it's just, foiling is more than just doing a sport, you know. It's giving you so much mental health, and it's giving you mental health, it's giving you health for your body. You are very fit. You are out there, so I think it's a very good addiction, not the worst addiction.
But doesn't everyone say about their addiction that it's good? No, I completely get you, man.
Yeah,
totally agree. And if I can say that, it's very, like, the way you live, in my opinion, like, for me, is very, very inspiring. So thank you very much for sharing.
Thank you so much
for sharing your content, because do you think that your experience as a marketer, as a media agent, helps you growing your channel?
Actually, I don't know, because I'm running my channel not with this idea to be a content creator and get money out of it, and that's exactly relates to what I do with my sponsors and my partners. They don't ask for anything. Like, we are in a very good relationship. And I don't even have, I'm writing Access because I love Access Foils. You know, we are in a good relationship, and they always bring exactly that foil that is needed to go a step further, you know? So that's why I continue with Access Foil, but I'm not forced to write Access Foil. All right. I mean, if you give me a Duotone tomorrow, I can try the Duotone and write it. And I did it already. You've seen posts with Indiana Foils on my channel. And riding the huge Indiana XXL foil, and this is also like I'm not, this gives me that freedom that I don't have to just use Access, for example, but I'm using it because I love this foil, and this is also what my channel is about. I'm trying to just do what I want and share the, I know that I could do some reels or some stories that maybe would gain a lot of followers, you know, just gaining some comedy stuff type videos, you know, that will be for a wider group, you know, maybe not just for the nerd foilers, they follow me, but for a wider group, they see, okay, it's easy and it's nice, and foiling is a cool sport, you know, but that's not my focus. So my focus on my channel is just to share what I do and the stories that I tell the stories that I'm living, you know, and also sharing my thoughts about gear. It can sometimes it goes a little bit more nerdy, and I'm talking about new gear, and then it's pretty entertaining. And I never do something for Instagram. So like the last reel that I did with this, actually I don't know the English word, with the you know, I replaced my pedal with a
what?
You've seen it?
Yeah, the one to clean the floor.
Just white. A broom.
That's what I was looking for. Exactly. So I saw this here in my apartment. I was like, why not give it a try? You know, and it was not because I was thinking about what could be a funny reel to put on Instagram. It was really because I want to figure out if it works. So how did important it? Is the pedal? Yeah, it did. I could get up on it.
Yes, but. You know, I saw Balt, and he said, you don't need a paraway, you can go with an IKEA bag, but he can also get on foil without anything, so...
That's true, and that's the trick, you know, if I put on a 700 foil, I would never get up with this thing, and I need a proper pedal and a good pedal to get a small foil flat water starting, but if you put a huge, and it was a prototype, an Access prototype, and I'm not sure, I could try to just pump it, and maybe I could even get up on foil just pumping it, you know? But still, it's the moment that I just, there's a stupid idea, or like it was flat and we were thinking, we have a dock start here, but it's far away from the waves. And we were thinking, man, it's flat. And how cool would it be to dock start in the wave, you know? And then we just built that dock, but it was not made for Instagram, you know, not for the Instagram reel. It was made for having fun. And then we shared this story and this vibe. And yeah, that's basically my idea for Instagram. I'm not doing it to gain follower. If I gain follower, okay. But if not, then it's okay. So, and no one is sure. People and sponsors are looking on followers, and sure, they are happy to give you gear. I mean, I feel it. I can ask companies and they just send me gear for trying it. But that's not the reason behind my Instagram.
It's super cool. It looks authentic. It's really nice. And I enjoyed very much. And I have a question about a video you did. Maybe you can elaborate if that will ever happen. The biplane foil.
I don't think this is going to be the future, because then you have like too much drag, right?
Yeah, my initial idea was like, you know, I had this foil drive, and the foil drive is up there on the mast, and it just helps you. You push the trigger and it pushes you on foil. And once you are up on foil, you ride just your foil and you don't feel the drag of the motor anymore. And then I got this idea, man, it would be so cool if I can take off like an Axis 1150, you know, a big slow foil, which is very easy to take off, and then have that second gear and you go on that small foil and go fast, you know. That was the idea. And I cut the fuse, an old fuselage, like digged some holes in it and put it on the aluminium mast, and it was not the nicest finish, but I tried it and I gave it a try. I could get it up on foil. I think it was way harder than if I just would ride the small foil, so it was not working pretty well. And I think it's not the future of downwind foiling.
But did you use it with a wing? I don't remember.
No, I was just paddling up with a paddle.
With a wing, it could work.
Yeah, maybe.
It looked very interesting to me.
Yeah,
and fun as well.
I was reaching out to some brands to give that development part to the brands and try that out. And I think I got a message back that there have been a brand, they played around with it and just trying to make a little tiny low aspect foil up there on the mast, you know, to give that extra lift in the beginning. But I'm not sure what happened to this. So I stopped developing on this. But recently, I mean, the foil generation we are having right now, it's so incredible. I mean, I'm not just talking about Axis foils. All the other foils are in a very good high end level right now. But I'm now discovering foils that I can flat water start 700 square centimeter foils. And it's not because my skills are now on that level. I mean, sure, I have gained some skills, but the foils are so good to take off in the low end. I don't know how it works. It's maybe the foil section and the design. There's so much in the detail, but they take off so easy. And then once you're on a downwind run, they go so fast. So you already have that second gear feeling, you know, of taking off and then pushing it, and the dynamic range of the speed is so high. So maybe it's not really necessary to do the B-plane anymore, because the foils are getting so good right now.
I have a last question about the foils. You started probably with a lower aspect foil, a bigger foil, bigger board as well. Do you still have that old setup? And if yes, have you ever tried using it in the last couple of months?
Right in the beginning, I started on a huge gong foil, like, I don't know, 3,000 square centimeters, or like wide span, super thick profile, like super draggy on a 40 millimeter wobbly mast, 65 centimeters. So I might still have that foil, but I leave it in my garage for like, maybe I give it to my son just to show him when he's foiling what I was starting on, you know, like the dinosaur. But then I moved pretty quick to the Axis PNG 3000, which was the first foil, because I was looking into pump foiling. We have flat spots everywhere, and I was really looking into pump foiling. And I was taking that foil, which is a span of 1300. So, and it was actually pretty high aspect for this time. So, and this foil I took out just a few months ago to compare it to the V2 they just released. And it actually still feels pretty good. It's not that it's impossible to ride, or that it feels like, oh, how could I have done all the shit on this foil? But still, now you see the V2 coming out, and there's just so much improvement in the foils. And I'm blown away that there's still so... It's not about... You remember the step from going low aspect to higher aspect and go to new profiles, and it was huge. And now, just recently, again, I feel like a big step in the revolution. Like there was code coming on the market, like the code foil from James Casey. It was so good, and it was so easy, so accessible, so to so many people to write them. And and then I just discovered the new foil range of the Access Foil they just released, and still again, such a huge improvement in the foils that I'm very excited for what's coming in the future. I mean, where's the limit, you know? It's getting better and better and better.
Very cool. Kyle, I'm pretty much done with my list. Do you have anything to add?
Yeah, like just one last question since you are talking about gear. When you're going out, what you base the choice of your foil off of?
Well, it's a huge question. I think there's no basic one. I think gear matters so much in foiling. I was just talking here with the local school about how they do the rental in foiling, and I think it's different from windsurfing or even from. Like, you know, if you go out and if you have your specific foils and you're dialed into it and you can get crazy on it, you can shim tail wings, you can have a bigger tail, a smaller tail, high aspect front wings. And I have like, I don't know how many foils I have. And I was just looking at them and was thinking, which foil can I leave home next time? And I, this one, do I need the PNG? Yeah, I need it. Okay. And what about the 1400 PNG? I need it as well. And then, okay, what is the RT? This is a little more surfy. If I want to go in a surfy downwind, I take this one, you know? And it's not even that I have a range for a downwind foil. We are looking, how should this downwinder look like today? We go surfing downwinder, like, you know, like making nice turns because we have steep bumps or like, not too windy, not too big, or we go on a racing downwinder and we choose this different type of foil. So I think in foiling, it really matters to have the right gear. It makes it so much easier. For example, I just did a run 1 day ago, no, 2 days ago, and I just had a little shorter fuselage and I was feeling so uncomfortable. I was falling. I was not finding my lines and it was so pitch unstable. The stability in the pitch was not good. And now I changed to a longer fuse and it was day and night for me. I was just enjoying so much. And just because of that little tweak in the gear, you get just a better experience. And so I think there's no like average foil. Maybe on flat water, I have my favorites because flat water is flat water. But when you have conditions, windy conditions or winging, I really look for the condition and for the way I want to ride my foils. And this is also why I think for rentals, it's hard. Beginners, okay, if you just put them on it. But I'm sure if you guys will go on a vacation and go for holiday and go foiling, you take your own gear. You don't go in rental. You don't want to change brands. You want to have your own dialed in gear and you exactly, yeah, so that you exactly know what you can expect from your gear.
Yes, but you must travel with a container. How?
Yeah, I have a container with four wheels. So this is my van. You know, we have a big motorhome. So this is where we can put all the foils, the foil draft batteries, which are super hard to fly with, you know. And we travel mostly by our camper van.
Well, I'm pretty much through. Go ahead.
I think that's it. Unless Lucas wants to add something.
I want to say thank you. That's the only one.
Thank you too. I learned a lot and I really appreciate you coming into the podcast and sharing your passion.
Yes, I have just one more thing. Usually that's you, Kyle, who asked that. And as my daughter, she came home from swimming practice. Yeah, just what's next? You're in Tenerife at the moment. What happens next? How long are you staying? What's your next adventure?
So next adventure, we fly back now for Christmas, spend Christmas time at home with family and the kids and the grandmas. And then we jump into the plane again and go to Tenerife, have a few days here. And then for the first time, we go to Fuerteventura. This is also where we met, where we will meet Julia, and she will show me a bit around. And we try to discover if downwind is possible there and how it is. It's way more sandy, and Fuerteventura is heaven for surfing and winging for sure. So maybe more winging and surf foiling or foil driving on my Instagram next. But that's our next adventure.
Almost like a personal question: how long are you gonna stay there for? Because I might get in the Canary Islands.
Oh, that's awesome! So we yesterday we just booked the tickets for the ferry, and we're gonna go on the 29. We go to Fuerte and we come back on 11 January. And then just a few days on Tenerife, and then we go back to Germany.
All right. Nice. So,
very cool.
I think I can make it, but thank you very much.
So if anyone is out there, just reach out to me and I'm happy to share a session with you guys.
All right. Awesome. So all that's left for me is to tell you what the next episode is going to be about, or who's going to be on the next episode. So the next episode is going to be with Leo. He's a pump father from Berlin. Maybe you've met him, Lucas.
Oh, he's actually here. He's here.
Yeah. Yeah, I just
shared
Patrick,
a session
right?
with him, with Patrick, awesome. Yeah, and we met a awesome. Lot in pump foiling in Berlin. It's a super, super interesting scene there in Berlin. They are pump foiling, but they are not on flat water. They have a lot of boat wakes, and they are wake seething like crazy. Yeah, so it's a. I think he has a pretty few interesting stories to tell. So it's worth tuning in. I will check this episode.
Nice. Well, thank you very much. And thank you for being on the show, man. Really cool. Yeah. I love your content and look forward to what's coming next. All right. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lucas.
Thank you.
Bye, guys. See you in the next one. Bye-bye.